This interview with Horace Kenneth Eklund took place at his home at 1015 4th Avenue South in Moorhead on August 25, 1975. The interviewer is Judy Edden, senior at Moorhead State College, working with the grant from Minnesota Historical Society on regional studies. Okay. Mr. Eklund, when were you born and where?
I was born December 20th, 1905, in this house, in that room over there, which was a bedroom at that time.
And how long did your family lived in this area? Did they live in this house long?
The family, as many of us as there were in the family at the time, moved in here in 1897. Mm-hmm. At that time, there was my parents and two brothers and two sisters older than I was, naturally. And the rest of us were all born here, the other two sisters and four sisters. I had four older sisters, two younger sisters, and two older brothers.
It was a big family.
Mm-hmm.
What was your father's occupation then?
My father was a painter. He had a painting, he's a painting contractor here in Moorhead for many years. Both of my parents were born in Sweden. They were not acquainted from over there, but my father immigrated over here in 1881. He had a sister who had come ahead of him and was living in Fargo with her husband, who was a shoemaker or cobbler over there. In Sweden, he had been apprenticed to a master painter and learned the painting business, which wasn't quite the same as it is today. He didn't know all about how to make paint in those days. So after he finished with his apprenticeship and became a journeyman painter, then he became a master painter, and after, that was at the age of 21. He came over here then in 1881. My mother came over with her family. They lived in northern Sweden. They had some sort of a deal in those days where people were coming over from this country, sort of developers, I suppose you'd call them, whatever. And they convinced about six or eight families living in that part of the country to give up their homes there and come over to the United States. I guess this was quite a thing to be doing back in the 1880s and 90s when they brought over a lot of people from Scandinavian countries. So my mother and her family, her folks, and brother and sister, plus about the other half a dozen or so families, all settled around Wadena, Minnesota. And they all homesteaded there, built their log cabins, and lived there until some of the families are still farming there. Came to live in Moorhead because my father had been here, and my mother came to town, as a lot of the daughters of immigrants in those days, they would come into the city if they lived in the farm and work as housemaids. So I'm not sure just how she happened to come to Moorhead, but anyhow, while she was here, she became acquainted with my father. And they were married in 1886.
What was her maiden name and your father's?
Her maiden name was Margaret Johnson. And as many Scandinavians did in those days, her parents changed their name to Nordine when they were living down near Wadena. My father's name originally was Anderson, and he changed his name to Eklund after he came over here. All of these changes made it much simpler to not get so confused with all the Scandinavians who are Johnsons, Eklund, or Olsons, or whatnot. So, my occupation back here ways, talked about my birthplace. Currently, I'm retired retired from the telephone company as general traffic manager for the state of North Dakota in 1967. I had only one son, and he is now living in Washington, D.C., where he is a curator with the Smithsonian Institution. He has two children. This house, as far as I can determine from the abstract, was built in about 1881 or 2. Could have even been earlier, but at that particular time in the abstract, they talked about someone who was a carpenter, I suppose, or a builder, was having some trouble collecting the money from the man who, for whom he had built the house, and there was something in the abstract about this man being unable to make payments, so a mechanic's lien was filed against the house. So that makes it pretty old, I guess. And we moved in here in the summer, my wife and son, in the summer of 1945. And I've done an awful lot of work getting the place changed around, although basically it's about the same as it was. Mm-hmm. At this particular time when I was young, very young, in fact, trying to think now what. In this particular area of Moorhead, as far back as I can remember, there were not too many houses around here. I remember when I used to go to school, I'd go out the back door and go cutting right straight across to, over to the model school, which is the elementary portion of the Moorhead Normal at that time. Would you be interested at this point in hearing about more history about the area here?
Yeah, that'd be fine if you could say what, you know, what you remember about the building up of this area. You said something about when it was originally platted, that 11th Street was the end of the city?
Yeah, the first thing I ever knew about that, long before I was here, the first map I ever saw of the city, this 4th Avenue here is called Garraway Street. And one plat of the city showed that it ended on 10th Street South. Mm-hmm. And I don't know when they platted this. Apparently this was set up as an area for homesteading, because looking at the old abstract dated 1871, it showed that the amount of acreage in this area was, I think, approximately about a square mile. And then as the abstract went on, it told about certain portions of it being built up or being homesteaded, I suppose. And a lot of it's interesting in the abstract to see all the names of Moorhead people, including S.G. Comstock, in this abstract. This is apparently where he picked up a pretty good piece of acreage south from, I suppose, it'd be 4th Avenue now. And included the area out where the normal school or Moorhead State University, as we are now called. And this is part of the acreage that in this area that he owned at that time, part of the acreage is given to the area where Moorhead University now stands. It's going to be hard for me to get used to this calling it Moorhead State University.
Me too.
As I started out as a student there in September of 1910 in the kindergarten, from which I graduated in 1911, if you do such things as graduate from a kindergarten. Then the next thing I did was to start in the first grade in the fall of 1911, and went on from there through the eight grades in the so-called model school. I think the model portion of it had to do something with the manner in which it was conducted as a school. It had nothing to do with the kids who were there, because there were not very many model ones in the groups, as I remember. And we used to be kind of the bane of existence for some of these young would-be teachers who were practicing on us. And we were certainly not very model students. But it was a fun place to go to school. Currently in Morehead, they had several elementary schools around, but the high school was in an old, old building and very crowded. And I was very happy that I went over to the normal school, or the model school, because we had a lot of facilities here that were lacking in the city schools. We had a fine gymnasium where we used to be able to go and play in the wintertime or indulge in whatever activities they had for us in the gym, like marching around to music, and as we got a little older, playing basketball and having fun there. And then in 1919, more graduation, I suppose you'd call it, although we didn't have any such thing as a formal graduation from the eighth grade. And I continued on. At that time, they had a three-year high school course. And you could go through and get your high school training, and it seemed like many of the ones who did that stayed on and went on into the, let's see, that would be still unknown. Changed to a Morehead State Teachers College by that time, or wasn't it? Yes, it was. 1921 is when they changed over, and that year, after I'd spent 2 years in this three-year high school they had, which was always all part of the college, kind of an interesting setup, because you had all of the elementary school, the so-called junior high, or whatever you wanted to call it, and the college were all mixed up together, and you never were quite sure where the classroom was going to be, or how they would work to arrange for the classes. So after staying there for 2 years, at that time, as a state teacher's college, a new high school had been built in Morehead. And so I deserted the Morehead State, or the high school, whatever they called it in those days, and went over to Morehead High School. And after having a busy 2 years there, being very active in various school things, I came back over to Morehead State College, Morehead State Teachers College, it was still at that time, I guess, and proceeded to take up industrial arts. At that time, this was rather a new field for men teachers. Most of the men who had gone there previous to that time, I think, had gone into elementary teaching, but they developed quite an industrial arts course, and many of the men who went up there at that time got into this industrial arts. After you had finished 2 years, providing you got through with or without any honors, you could go out and teach in a high school industrial arts. So after working diligently as a not too good student and enjoying life at school quite a little, I did not finish my courses in 2 years. So I decided I better come back the next year. And then in order to get into something I enjoyed more than industrial arts, I'd always liked music, so I switched over to the music course, and this I enjoyed very much and did much better at it than I did in industrial arts. So from there, let's see, where are we now? You want to ask me about?
Yeah, I'd like to know if there are any teachers or any experiences that you had going to the normal school or the model school that stick out in your mind particularly.
Well, certainly there were some fine teachers up there. There were some others that I didn't get along with too well. I guess because I wasn't too good a student, too busy with a lot of other activities. Dan Preston, who's still living and teaching over in Fargo, music, was one of my favorite teachers, certainly. And then there was always Alex Slivnemczyk, the athletic director and football coach. very fine man and a good friend of mine. I of course remember the presidents up there. Dr. Weld, of course, was there up till 1919. I think he started in the late 19th century, 18th century, 1899 or something like that. He was a very fine man, and a person I knew quite well because he went to the same, to the Congregational Church, where I did too. Then the next one was Dr. Dickerson. He was there about 3 years, I think, something, yeah, I guess he left in 23. And I was up at school there during some of that time. I don't remember too well. And then Dr. McLean came in, and he was another very fine person. He was there for a long time, an excellent administrator and educator. In school, particularly the last years I was there, you see I was there 3 years, striving diligently to get through the 2-year course so I could get a diploma. So I wound up with a peculiar combination of a teaching certificate for industrial arts and graduated in music. The next year after I got out of school, really wants some more about school.
Oh, whatever.
What I, my activities in school involved journalism to a degree. I was sports editor for the Tri-Captor and for the Mystic. Necessarily, being in music, played in the school orchestra. I organized a dance band the second year I was there. And we had a 4-piece band and played for the college dances. Mm-hmm. And this was fun. And also on the side I played otherwise outside of the school. And it helped a little bit, earn a little money.
What was your name for the dance band?
Oh, I don't remember. It had all kinds of funny names for it. One was a campus four and one was a college four, and one of my buddies called them Hod's Hot Hams. I played the saxophone, clarinet, and banjo, and we had 1 year Harlow Berquist, who's now living over in Fargo, the second year I was at school, and this is when we got the band started. He played saxophone, violin, and I guess that's it. He also played piano. In fact, he taught music in Fargo school system for a long time. Our pianist was Martha Akeley Hook, who is now in business over in Fargo. And the drummer was a big Dutchman from Fern by the name of Weber. That was the second year that we had the orchestra. And we had a lot of fun playing school dances. I think it's the first time they ever had they might have had dance bands, I don't know, but not like the one we had. So, the next year we continued with a different pianist, and then, the whole operation except myself was different. I had a fellow by the name of Ed Malvey who played the saxophone and clarinet strictly by ear. He couldn't read music. And the drummer, I can't remember his name now even, had a little trouble getting him to keep time properly. And a very fine jazz pianist by the name of Clementine Small, who was very active in school too.
Were all these people, from Fargo, Moorhead area, they're all people went to the school?
They were all at school. They were all interested in music. See, what else did I do at school? Well, I was belonged to the Owl Fraternity. I belonged to the, we had some music group, I forget what they called that one. I can't remember all the things I did, except I still could never figure out. Oh yes, I was sports writer for the Tri-Captor and the Mystic. I enjoyed that very much. We had a pretty good section in the Tri-Captor. I was sports editor for both the men and the women. And the preceding year, they had two men writing sports for men and two men writing sports for women. And I got all of them done myself and had more fun doing it. Mm-hmm. Sometime, if you have time, well, you can look over that old crack after. Mm-hmm. Read all the notes in there that people wrote. Mm-hmm. See, one of the interesting things about going to school back in those days is the fact that there were about 500 girls up there and probably about 50 men. So yeah. That would keep you busy.
Pretty
too.
Good
odds. Give you a pretty high quota.
Mm-hmm.
To
keep
track of.
What were the fraternities like then? Were there many of them?
Well, there was only the one male fraternity, the Owl Fraternity, which is still in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And was organized in 1901. And next year is supposed to be the 75th, the Diamond anniversary, I guess. And it was typical enough fraternity. We got together and had fun. The Owl, we didn't have a fraternity house, but the top floor of the old main building had been vacated, and Dr. McLean let us use that as a fraternity. Thought of something else that I won't mention about that. But it was a handy place to get together, and we had our initiations up there.
What were initiations like?
Well, they were fun, and could get a little rough at times. But everybody always survived, and we had fun. We had dances a couple times a year. I can't remember that we did anything useful as far as the school was concerned. It was purely a social fraternity. And at the same time, of course, there were two women's sororities. And they were very active socially, too. They had both been organized way back in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm. Are they some of the same ones that they have now?
Oh, yes, they are. They have different names now. One of the women's sororities started out as the Witches.
Oh.
Changed to Pi Mu Phi's. Finally wound up as with a national sorority group, the Gamma Phi Betas. The other one started out in life as the Gamma Nichis, which is half Latin and half Indian, I guess, or something. Then they changed to Gamma Nus, and they are now the Delta Zetas. And they were purely social. There's a couple more of them up there now, and there's more men fraternities too, but I don't know. Keep track of them. I happen to always kind of wonder, not wonder, but maintain an interest, you might say, in the goings-on of the two original women's sororities, and the rest of them that they've started since then, I don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm. You said something about that you played football and that you were kind of drafted to go to Morehead State or Morehead State
teachers? Oh, no, not particularly drafted, but when I was in high school, I played football and basketball and ran around the track. And the man who had been coaching, part-time anyhow, was Alex Slivenimczyk. And he, in the fall of 23, became athletic director, or started him as coach up at Morehead State Teachers College, as it was known then. And so those of the football team who were going on to college, in those days there weren't an awful lot of people who did.
Mm-hmm.
We came up there to MS because he had wanted us to, I guess. And so we had played football there, played there for 3 years. Monkeyed around with basketball, but didn't take it too seriously. Track was just for fun. We never had any formal track, just something else to do.
They'd almost make another remark here.
Well,
like
no, too. I wish you would, really.
Oh, yeah, they have some activities in the spring, particularly. So then the girls always had softball teams up there, kitten ball, we called them in those days. So we used to help referee those games or umpire them or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it was another good outdoor activity in the springtime. Then we used to play tennis, too. I didn't care about baseball, so I monkeyed around the track. We had no formal track meets. Well, let's see now, where are we?
I'd like to know what was Alex Nemczyk like?
Oh, what kind of a fine man. He was very active in town here. Among other things, he was in the real estate business. He was mayor of Moorhead 1 year for 2 years, and had done a lot to do some planning, which had never been done before. Moorhead just grew like Topsy. There'd be any kind of a house here and then something else, a lot of vacant lots in town. Moorhead didn't expand much until after World War II, you might say. The population, and when I came back here in 1940, I think it was about 9,000. And people were still pretty much confined within the city limits area, which didn't go out too far. It was about, I won't get into all that. Except that it kept growing pretty fast after the war. Got up to around 15,000 in 1950, and I forget now. Anyhow, it kept growing on and spreading out until now. Of course, it covers a big territory, particularly the south.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, Mr. Nemczyk, Slug as he was called, been a fine athlete in his day in Moorhead High School, and also he'd gone out to North Dakota State, or AC as they called it then, and been the best football player they had out there in those days. During the World War I, he was in service in France. When he came back, he did some coaching around here. Finally wound up, as they say, at Moorhead State Teachers College. Facilities up there were in the old building were not too good. The gymnasium was a kind of an odd place. It had the two big pillars at one end, which presumably were to help hold the thing up. But when we played basketball, it was kind of a nuisance to the other team if they didn't know how to use those two posts to keep from running into them when they were trying to shoot baskets. Interesting old gym in that it had a racetrack around the top of it. One of the main purposes of it was to have parties there, so whenever any group had a party, they'd run streamers from the balcony down or out some way or other, I don't remember. Decorating the gym for dances was always quite a big project. So that was a kind of a fun place over there.
Where was the gym located?
On the old building that burned down in 1930.
Mm-hmm.
There were three parts to the school. There was the old original main building, and I mentioned that was built in 1888, I guess it was, thereabouts. And the gym was added in, I think, around 1900 sometime. And then I believe that the model school was built in about 1908.
Mm-hmm.
So there were the three additions on there. But it was an interesting old gym. In fact, the only one in Moorhead at that time, all of Concordia, had built there another gym later on. I think that was, I forget exactly when it was. But anyhow, made a nice place to have parties, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't very good for basketball.
Nowadays there's a little bit of rivalry between Moorhead State and Concordia, is that?
No, yes, that goes way back when. I remember when we were kids, we always used to think it was great. Back in those days, Morehead Normal School, Morehead State Teachers College, would win most of the games from Concordia. The 3 years I played up there, they were nothing to nothing ties, and after that, it started swinging pretty much the other way. So in the past few years, for quite a few years, Concordia has been able to get enough big Husky Norwegians up there to win most of the games in a long time, since Morehead has won one, or even tied one. Well, they keep striving at it. Might do better this year, I hope.
Yeah. I was wondering who you played and how you got to games, to and from games in college.
Oh, well, in those days, of course, I think we had a league, or I don't know what you'd call it, conference consisting of Morehead State, Jamestown College in North Dakota, Valley City in North Dakota, and Wapton Science. And on the side, why we'd play different places. St. Cloud occasionally. One time went up to Hibbing to play the junior college up there. Mm-hmm. And then there was another junior college at Coleraine, and we played them 1 year. And of course, Concordia. I guess that's about where most of our... I mean, we didn't play so many games as they do now. I think we played 6 or 7, and we didn't start practicing 4 weeks before school started. The day school started, you'd start playing. I mean, you'd go out for practice. Finally, wind up playing your last games in November. One time we played a game when it was about 10 above zero and snow in the field, and that wasn't any fun either, because you get too late in the year. So now they play 9 or 10 games. Of course, they have a huge football squad. I don't know how many are out there, but anyhow, we used to have about 70 or 80 of them. We used to have just enough to scrimmage one side of the line against the other, because there weren't very many that went out. We didn't have very many men in school who'd even play football. But we worked at it. We had one fair year, one very good year, and one very poor year. Basketball team was very, because of the poor facilities for practicing, the old gymnasium never did very well. They had an excellent baseball team. They were beating everything all around. They had one pitcher who could have gone into major leagues if he had wanted to. And had some good players. We had fun with athletics. In those days, you didn't take it too seriously. If we didn't win all the games, they didn't fire the coaches like they do now.
Mm-hmm. Did you take cars or trains?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see, mostly cars. I remember the time I went up and played Hibbing on the train. But we go out to Jamestown. They didn't have school buses, of course, in those days. I don't remember where in the world they dig up these automobiles to take, but somewhere or other. Maybe somebody in the faculty had one. Nimzik always had his own car. I remember I took our family car one time to haul somebody somewhere. But none of those places. Jamestown, 100 miles away. Valley City, about 60. Wapiton, about 50. So it wasn't too hard to travel. And also, of course, you play home and home. You play at home 1 year and away the next year. So there would only be about 2 or 3 games where you went out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, they do a lot of them, haul them around by plane. Of course, they go a lot greater distances now, too. So I'm still much interested in athletics at school. Back in 1956, Nimzik and I self-organized an operation to try to help raise some money for recruiting, which up to that time, MS could not compete too much with the other schools, like SU particularly, or even Concordia. So we organized a group to try to raise a little money, and those of us who belong put some money in ourselves, and the thing gradually grew, and at the present time they've got a setup over there which is bringing in a pretty good amount of money to help recruit. The way of life now.
Mm-hmm.
Getting athletes to go to school by giving them something to help pay their expenses. Lord only knows in this day and age they need it too. Well, what else can I find in here? College life, classes, teachers. Classmates. Oh, then, yeah, the other thing I was going to talk about, after I retired in 1967, I decided I'd go back to school. I would make that one of my hobbies,
mm-hmm.
along with hunting, which is the other hobby love of my life. So in 1968, in January, I started in over at MS. I didn't work too hard at it. I only took a couple of subjects. And I thought if I could go on long enough, I might get enough credits to get a degree. And that wasn't really a primary objective. I just thought I'd see what it's like to go to school again. Well, I enjoyed it. I switched over into something I'd never had any experience with. I went into political science as a major subject and took geography as a minor. And one of the reasons I got into political science, I'd become acquainted with Dr. Koshkish at a seminar where the telephone company would have people in from the different colleges around and talk about business and education. So as he was head of the political science department, so I went up to school, I decided to take classes from him in political science, which I did, which I enjoyed very much.
Mm-hmm.
Geography on the side was, I'd always been interested in geography too, study, so that fit in pretty well. And after, let's see, spring of 1970 was when I decided that I'd lay off for a while. And maybe decide to come back. I don't know how many more credits I need. Not too many. I may take another run at it sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Finish it up as long as I've started. School's a lot different now than it used to be 50 years ago. You guess
mm-hmm.
that?
What are some of the changes that you've seen? Some of the most striking ones? In college and classes and teachers and such?
Well, it's entirely different college today, certainly, than it was way back then. For one thing, you have a lot more specialization, I guess you'd say, where back in those days you had one teacher in science, like a man by the name of Bellard, who was a wonderful teacher, and for many, off and on, he would, when they changed presidents, he was, you might say, kind of a vice president up there, and he taught there for many, many years. But now they have, of course, a different faculty. Most of them have, or a large portion of them at least, have doctor's degrees and specializations. Teaching's a lot different. I don't know just how to describe it, really. But it's like everything else changes. Our whole economic system changes. We went from the horse and buggy days into automotive age and then into the age of flying. Now they're even talking about, I don't know where they're going to put them all. Get out and have people go to the moon or someplace to live, whatever. It's a different life, it's a different world entirely. But I guess I wouldn't be able to know enough about what is involved in the administration of a college. Now that's changed the whole thing, it's a different. Just like business is so different than it is. Mm-hmm. And the world as a whole is changing. The economic system is not what it used to be. And life is a lot different now than what it used to be.
Yeah, and you said about working for Northwestern Bell, you started in 26?
No, I started in 28, down in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there working for about 6 years, and I transferred up to St. Cloud. I was there for 3 years, and back to Twin Cities again. Till 1940, when I was transferred up here. Mm-hmm. By that time, the lure of living in a big city, which seemed like quite a thing to do when you're younger, I'd lost a little interest in that. I was very happy to be able to come back here again. And because people in a business like that transfer around a lot, I was very happy that I could stay put here, because this is my home and the only place I want to live. In spite of our tough cold winters. I'm a crazy enough Swede to even like winters up here. They don't bother me any.
What changes took place in Northwestern Bell? The school's expanded a lot while you were working there.
Changes? Oh, Lord. You write a book on that one.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of them. From an operation which was manually handled entirely to one which is now very mechanized. Just like everything is getting mechanized. Your whole concept of operating a business with computers, that sort of thing, it's an entirely different world.
Mm-hmm.
And of course all these things have been improvement in the art of telephony, I guess you could say. Just like I'm sure there are many improvements in the teaching, instructing in schools, all that sort of thing. It's a different world entirely. So I was always very fortunate, I thought, that I got a job with them. It's been a wonderful place to work. I know they are very much interested in their employees and the people after they retire. They keep in constant touch, they keep in touch with us to know what's going on with us, and already the personnel to help with the problems that we have as retired people. So I think very fortunate that I was able to get a job with them, stayed with it. I worked for 39 and a half years before I retired. And from the time I started till the time I got through with fine work, and working up here, of course, I like very much. Traveled around North Dakota a lot. A great state. I liked working there. I didn't have too much if I came to Fargo to do it. The Minnesota side. Well, it looks to me like, time is...
Got a while left.
Still got some more time.
How did you come to work for Northwest Bell being in music?
Well, I did teach school. I should mention that for 1 year.
Oh.
After I graduated in 1926, I taught school down in Pelican Rapids,
mm-hmm.
industrial arts, and coached. And after 1 year of teaching, I decided, look around, see what else I could find to do. I enjoyed coaching. I can't say that I was much of a success as an industrial arts teacher. Didn't care for that particularly.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back and I worked at various jobs around here. And for one quarter in 1928, I went over to SU and took some subjects I was interested in over there. And after that quarter was over, I decided to head for the big city where I had a brother and a sister living and see if I could find me a job down there. And I'd always been interested in the telephone company as a place to work. I had some friends who had worked there and I always thought it was a great place. So I applied down there and it just so happened that I was the right person at the right time to get a job. And I was very happy that I got it. And it's been a been a wonderful life for me. As working and then having the advantages of associations with the company after I retired. So it was just purely by, not by accident, but by intention on my part to get into the telephone company that I was fortunate to find at the right time in the right place to get the job. And then everything, all the breaks I got after that, the places I worked were fine. I particularly liked St. Cloud as a place to live and work. And the cities were nice. I was glad to get out of the big city and get back to God's country, as I call it. Yes.
Has you been back much during the time between when you started working for Northwest Bell and when you moved back to Marriott?
Well, I'd come back for vacations mm-hmm. and visits. Well, practically every year since I left. And would see the changes in the town. There weren't so many of them back through the 30s. Yeah, I came in 1940 and I left here in 28. I couldn't see that things had changed a lot. Of course, by then, the old Normal or Morris State Teachers College or whatever they were, after the old building burned down, and then they built a new place, and it was a lot different, naturally, with a lot of nice facilities. The campus school operation was an interesting change from what they had before. And then all the things they've done at the school since then, back through the years, the planning to keep ahead of the enrollment. Very fine job is being done through the years there. Particularly, Neumeyer started pretty much of the building growth while he was there. And this was continued under Dr. Dill, and they got along with a very fine campus. People who come in here from outside are always very much impressed with the way the school has grown and the facilities that have been set up there. Fortunately, most of them were planned and are in before they got under this austerity program of not doing any more building, you mm-hmm. might say. And of course, the enrollments are dropping off, although, again, because of a fine activity up there. They have been able to keep the enrollment up, I think, better than any of the other state colleges. They are not down as far, I know, as some of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been a planned operation, too, to develop as good an enrollment as they possibly could. It isn't just by chance that this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Done some fine planning on that.
What is this? I'm looking at this yearbook. Prey Captor? What does that mean?
Oh, I don't know.
It's
Latin, and I don't know much about Latin. When I was in high school, I took Latin for one morning, and I met the manual training the next afternoon.
No.
So I guess it's Latin.
Hot.
That's my nickname. Yeah. And that's what people know me as. Incidentally, this peculiar combination of Horace Kenneth was wished on me by a neighboring lady who was very much interested in the fact that the Ecklands had a son after having four daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, according to one of my older brothers, he said, yeah, you got that name because they drew it out of a hat, and I can believe it. How an old Swedish family would ever pick up anything like that. I've always detested the name, for that matter. And I've been known as Hod all my life since I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nickname I acquired. Well, that book was very interesting to work on. I enjoyed writing it. You can look at it someday. You can read all the little sayings, particularly the ones.
Well, this is Weld?
That's Weld Hall, yeah. And this next section there, that's all taken from a side view
mm-hmm.
of the school. I was reading that this morning,
mm-hmm.
the history there, recalling some of it. That's what this old buddy of mine called
mm-hmm.
Odd's Hot Hands. We used to go out and play at the Dilworth City Hall.
Uh-huh.
And so this kid used to come out there.
still a city hall in Duluth?
I guess they got some. I don't remember too much mm-hmm. about what it was. There's all the seniors. You will notice predominantly female. Mm-hmm. Once in a while you'll see a man in there, but not very mm-hmm. often. Like mm-hmm. I say, with a quota of 10 to 1, you keep pretty busy, you know.
Yeah. I guess teaching was mostly a woman's job at that time.
Well, it was, because this is the first year that they graduated a four-year, or a man in a four-year course. They had one or two women who, one of them could have graduated, but she decided to get married and left school. We would have had two of them if she kept on that year. And then they had a third-year class, and from there on out, of course, they kept on primarily in going to the four-year program. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for me, I'm not in there.
You're not.
Because I'm too busy to get around getting my picture taken.
Oh, doggone. Mm-hmm.
But if you want to see all my activities, turn to the athletic section.
Okay.
That's what I turned out. And my girlfriend at the time was a humor editor.
Mm-hmm.
So
who's that? Who's the girl?
Oh, I can show you pictures of her too, lots of them. She was very busy and active.
Do you know what she's doing?
A wild Irishman. She was a character. Huh? What she's doing?
Mm-hmm.
She's living out in the West Coast someplace.
Mm-hmm. Does she get back for the reunions?
No. She's from Fargo. Somewhere in here, there's the orchestra. That's me on the end. I played the clarinet in the orchestra. Oh, here's a cuter one. This is a picture I always get a kick out of. There's a dance band.
Oh, wow. That is really neat.
Had lots of fun with that.
Mm-hmm. That same girl was in the quartet.
Yeah. Well, she played piano.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a string quartet.
Kind of a cute book.
It is a good book, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now we're going to find the athletic section.
Athletics, and that's it. That's for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Football is back on the other side of that, and there's base. There's a girls section. That was mm-hmm. my pride and joy.
Where's your football section?
Oh, that's over back here.
There.
There it is. See, I played center.
Mm-hmm. Well, the uniforms look different then.
They were different.
Were they padded as much as they are now?
Well, they were a lot different. No comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a squad. That's all the men that came out for football. Now they have about 80 or 100.
Yeah. It's not nearly that big.
And whenever they had the picture taken, everybody who ever came out would come out and have their picture
mm-hmm.
taken. They may not show up again. We usually wound up with about this many and about four or five more by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. There were such things as scholarships at all then for playing in athletics?
No.
No?
Oh, Lord, no. No. You got a job. You could work if you wanted to for 35 cents an hour. We helped build the athletic field on that
mm-hmm.
by getting paid for that. See, that's my artistry too. Put them on
it. They look like little
on the big end.
Paper dolls. Sort of.
And then the same with the basketball here.
Mm-hmm.
There's Nemzik.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote everything in here except this one here. I had the man who was the right after head because I didn't think I could do him justice.
Mm-hmm.
Put everything else in there. Basketball
right.
season. And there's the basketball team. Don't say much about the baseball. There's M Club. Here's all the gals.
Mm-hmm.
I really did them justice, didn't I?
Yeah.
humor. That's from way back when.
Spring Frolic, isn't it?
Spring Frolic, yeah. I was going to show you here. So I can find. Yeah. That's her right there. Not a very good picture.
What was her name?
She was a character. Had a lot of fun together.
Alice Dunn. She's the one that's living in the West Coast now?
Yeah.
Pretty good. I think we're just about to the end of our tape.
Oh, all right. Then it's time to close off.
Okay.